happened. Irene gave him a frown that said the girl might very well have been the cause of this, but kept her mouth shut. Within a minute, Kaja had left, closing the hall doors with a quiet click. Irene ran her hands over her face.
They took everything. Everything.
Did they?
He limped to the desk, peering into the drawers as he braced a hand on the surface. His back ached and writhed. Irene stormed to the gold couch, lifting the ruined cushions.
All those books, the scrolls.
It was common knowledge that we'd be gone.
He leaned fully against the desk, nearly sighing at the weight it took off his back. Irene carved a path through the room, inspecting all the places she'd ferreted away those books and scrolls.
They took it all, even the Song of Beginning.
What about the bedroom?
She vanished instantly. Kaol rubbed at his back, hissing softly. More rustling than,
ha!
She emerged again, waving one of his boots in the air.
At least they didn't find this.
That first scroll. He rallied a smile to his mouth.
At least there's that.
Irene held his boot to her chest as if it were a babe.
They're getting desperate. That makes people dangerous. We shouldn't stay here.
He surveyed the damage.
You're right.
Then we'll go directly to the Torre.
He glanced through the open doors to the foyer. To Nezrin's bedroom. She was due back soon. And when she did return, to find him gone with Irene? He'd treated her abominably. He'd let himself forget what he'd promised, what he'd implied in Rifthold. On the ship here. And Nezrin might not hold him to any promises, but he'd broken too many of them.
What is it?
Irene's question was barely more than a whisper. Kaol closed his eyes. He was a bastard. He'd dragged Nezrin here, and this was how he'd treated her. While she was off hunting for answers, risking her life, while she sought some shred of hope for raising an army, he'd sent that message, immediately, to return as fast as she could.
It's nothing,
Kaol said at last.
Perhaps you should stay at the Torre tonight. There are enough guards there to make anyone think twice.
He added when hurt flickered in her eyes.
I can't appear to be running away. Especially with the royals now starting to think I might be someone of interest. That Aelin continues to be such a source of worry and intrigue. Perhaps I should use that to my advantage.
He fiddled with the cane, tossing it from one hand to another.
But I should stay here. And you, Irene, you should go.
She opened her mouth to object, but paused, straightening. A steely glint entered her eyes.
I'll take Hafiza the scroll myself, then.
He hated the edge to her voice as he nodded, the dimming of those eyes. He'd done wrong by her, too. In not first ending things with Nezrin, to make it clear. He'd made a mess of it. A fool. He'd been a fool to think he could rise above this, move beyond the person he'd been, the mistakes he'd made. A fool. Chapter 53 Irene stormed up the Torre steps, careful not to crush the scroll in her fist. The trashing of his room had rattled him. Rattled her, too, but it wasn't fear of harm or death. Something else had shaken him. In her other hand, she clutched the locket, the metal warm against her skin. Someone knew they were close to discovering whatever it was they wanted to keep secret. Or at the very least suspected they might learn something, and had destroyed any possible sources. And after what they'd started to piece together in the ruins amid Aksara, Irene checked her temper as she reached the top landing of the Torre, the heat smothering. Hafiza was in her private workshop, tutting to herself over a tonic that rippled with thick smoke.
Ah, Irene, she said without looking up, while she measured in a drop of some liquid.
Vials and basins and bowls covered the desk, scattered between the open books and a set of bronze hourglasses of various time measurements.
How was your party?
Revelatory.
Lovely.
I assume the young lord finally handed over his heart.
Irene coughed. Hafiza smiled as she lifted her head at last.
Oh, I knew.
We are not... That is to say, there is nothing official.
That locket suggests otherwise.
Irene clapped a hand over it, cheeks heating.
He is not. He is a lord.
At Hafiza's raised brows, Irene's temper whetted itself. Who else knew? Who else had seen and commented and bedded?
He is a lord of Otterlin, she clarified.
So?
Otterlin.
I thought you had moved past that.
Perhaps she had. Perhaps she hadn't.
It is nothing to be concerned about.
A knowing smile.
Good.
Irene took a long breath through her nose.
But unfortunately, you are not here to give me all the juicy details.
Ugh,
Irene grimaced.
No.
Hafiza measured another few drops into her tonic, the substance within roiling. She plucked up her 10-minute hourglass and turned it over, bone-white sand trickling into the ancient base. A proclamation of a meeting begun even before Hafiza said,
I assume it has something to do with that scroll in your hand.
Irene looked to the open hall, then rushed to shut the door, then the open windows. By the time she'd finished, Hafiza had set down the tonic, her face unusually grave. Irene explained the ransacking of their room, the books and scrolls taken, the ruins at the oasis and their wild theory that perhaps the healers had not just arisen here, but had been planted here in secret, against the Volg and their kings. And for the first time since Irene had known her, the ancient woman's brown face seemed to go a bit colorless. Her clear, dark eyes turned wide.
You are certain?
That these are the forces amassing on your continent.
Hafiza settled herself into the small chair behind the work table.
Yes. Lord Westfall has seen them himself, battled them. It is why he came. Not to raise an army against mere men loyal to Otterlin's empire, but an army to fight demons who wear the bodies of men. Demons who breed monsters. So vast and terrible that even the full might of Aelin Galathinius and Dorian Havilyard is not enough.
Hafiza shook her head, her nimbus of white hair flowing.
And now you too believe that the healers have some role to play?
Irene paced.
Perhaps. We were relentlessly hunted down on our own continent, and I know it doesn't sound like anything to go on. But if a settlement of healing-inclined Fae did start a civilization here long ago, why? Why leave Doranel? Why come so far and leave so few traces, yet ensure that the healing legacy survived?
That is why you have come. And brought this scroll.
Irene placed the scroll before the healer on high.
Since Nusha only knew vague legends and didn't know how to read the language written here, I thought you might actually have the truth. Or tell me what this scroll might be about.
Hafiza carefully unfurled the scroll, weighing its corners with various vials. Dark, strange letters had been inked there. The healer on high traced a wrinkled finger over a few of them.
I do not know how to read such a language.
She ran her hand over the parchment again. Irene's shoulders sagged.
But it reminds me.
Hafiza scanned the bookshelves in her workshop, some of them sealed behind glass. She rose, hobbling to a locked case in the shadowy corner of the room. The doors there were not glass at all, but metal. Iron. She withdrew a key from around her neck and opened it, beckoned Irene over. Half stumbling through the room in her haste, Irene reached Hafiza's side. On a few of the spines of the tomes, near rotting with age.
Word marks,
Irene murmured.
I was told these were not books for human eyes, that it was knowledge best kept locked away and forgotten, lest it find its way into the world.
Why?
Hafiza shrugged, studying but not touching the ancient texts shelved before them.
That was all my predecessor told me. They are not meant for human eyes.
Oh, once or twice I've been drunk enough to debate opening up the books.
But every time I take out this key.
She toyed with the long necklace, the key of blackest iron hanging from it, a match to the cabinet.
I reconsider.
Hafiza weighed the key in her palm.
I do not know how to read these books, nor what this language is. But if those scrolls and books were in the library itself, then the fact that these have been locked up here, perhaps this is the sort of information worth killing for.
Ice skittered down her spine.
Kaol, Lord Westfall, knows someone who can read these markings.
Aelin Galathinius, he'd told her.
Perhaps we should bring them to her. The scroll, and these few books.
Hafiza's mouth tightened as she closed the iron doors to the cabinet and locked it with a heavy click.
I shall have to think on it, Irene. The risks. Whether these books should leave.
Irene nodded.
Yes, of course. But I fear we may not have much time.
Hafiza slid the iron key back under her robes and returned to the work table. Irene trailing her.
I do know a little of the history,
Hafiza admitted.
I thought it myth, but
my predecessor told me when I first came, during the Winter Moon Festival. She was drunk, because I'd plied her with alcohol to get her to reveal her secrets.
But instead she gave me a rambling history lesson.
Hafiza snorted, shaking her head.
I never forgot it.
Mostly because I was so disappointed that 3 bottles of expensive wine, purchased with all the money I had, got me so little. Irene leaned against the ancient work table as Hafiza sat and interlaced her fingers in her lap.
She told me that long ago, before man stumbled here, before the horse lords and the rooks above the steps, this land indeed belonged to Fae. A small, pretty little kingdom, its capital here. Antica was built atop its ruins, but they erected temples to their gods beyond the city walls, out in the mountains, in the riverlands, in the dunes.
Like the necropolis at Oxara.
Yes. And she told me that they did not burn their bodies, but entombed them with sarcophagi so thick no hammer or device could open them, sealed with spells and clever locks, never to be opened.
Why?
The drunk goat told me that it was because they lived in fear of someone getting in to take their bodies.
Irene was glad she was leaning on the table.
The way the Volg now use humans for possession.
A nod.
She rambled about how they had left their knowledge of healing for us to find. That they had stolen it from elsewhere. And that their teachings formed the basis of the Torah. That Kamala herself had been trained in their arts. Their records discovered in tombs and catacombs long since lost to us. She founded the Torah based off what she and her small order learned. Worshipped Silba, because she was their healing god, too.
Hafiza gestured to the owls carved throughout her workroom, the Torah itself, and rubbed at her temple.
So your theory could hold water. I never learned how the Fae came here,
where they went and why they faded away. But they were here. And according to my predecessor, they left some sort of knowledge or power behind. A frown toward that locked bookcase.
That someone is now trying to erase.
Irene swallowed.
Nusha will kill me when she hears those books and scrolls were taken.
Oh, she might very well. But she'll likely go on the hunt for whoever did it first.
What does any of it mean, though? Why go to so much trouble?
Hafiza strode back to her tonic, the hourglass nearly empty.
Perhaps that is for you to learn.
She added a few more drops of liquid to her tonic, grabbed the one-minute glass, and flipped it over.
I shall consider the books, Irene.
Irene returned to her room, flung open the window to let in the breeze to the stifling chamber, and sat on her bed for all of a minute before she was walking again. She'd left the scroll with Hafiza, figuring the locked bookcase was safer than anywhere else. But it was not scrolls or ancient books that filled her head as she turned left and headed downstairs.
Progress.
They had made progress on Kaol's injury, significantly so, and returned to find their room trashed.
His room, not theirs.
He'd made that clear enough earlier. Irene's steps were unfaltering, even as her legs ached from nearly 2 days' worth of riding.
There had to be some connection.
His progress, these attacks. She'd never get any thinking done up in her quiet, stuffy room. Or in the library. Not when she'd be jumping at every footstep or meow from a curious bast cat. But there was one place, quiet and safe. One place where she might work through the tangled threads that had brought them here. The womb was empty. After Irene had washed and changed into the pale, thin lavender robe, she'd padded into the steam-filled chamber, unable to help looking toward that tub by the far wall, toward where that healer had cried mere hours before her death. Irene scrubbed her hands over her face, taking a steadying breath. The tubs on either side beckoned, the bubbling waters inviting, promising to soothe her aching limbs. But Irene remained in the center of the chamber, amid all those faintly ringing bells, and stared up into the darkness high above. From a stalactite too far in the gloom to see, a droplet of water fell, landing on her brow. Irene closed her eyes at the cool, hard splash, but made no move to wipe away the water. The bells sang and murmured, the voices of their long-dead sisters. She wondered if that healer who had died, if her voice was now singing here. Irene peered up at the nearest string of bells hung across the chamber, various sizes and makes. Her own bell. On bare, silent feet, Irene padded to the little stalagmite jutting from the floor near the wall, to the chain sagging between it and another pillar a few feet away. 7 other bells hung from it, but Irene needed no reminder of which was hers. Irene smiled at the small silver bell, purchased with that stranger's gold. There was her name, etched into the side. Maybe by the same jeweler Kaol had found for the amulet hanging from her neck. Even in here, she had not wanted to part with it. Gently, she brushed her finger over the bell, over her name and the date she'd entered the Torre. A faint, sweet ringing leaped away in the wake of her touch. It echoed off the rock walls, off the other bells, setting some of them ringing as if in answer. Around and around the sound of her bell danced, and Irene turned in place as if she could follow it. And when it faded, Irene flicked her bell again, a louder, clearer sound. The ringing flitted through the room, and she watched it, tracked it. It faded once more, but not before her power flickered in answer. With hands that did not entirely belong to her, Irene rang her bell a third time. And as its singing filled the room, Irene began to walk. Everywhere its ringing went, Irene followed. Her bare feet slapping against the damp stone, she tracked the sound's path through the womb, as if it were a rabbit racing ahead of her. Around the stalagmites rising from the floor, ducking under the stalactites drooping from above. Crossing the room, slithering down the walls, setting the candles guttering. On and on she tracked that sound. Past the bells of generations of healers, all singing in its wake. Irene streamed her fingers along them, too. A wave of sound answered. You must enter where you fear to tread. Irene walked on, the bells ringing, ringing, ringing. Still, she followed the sound of her own bell, that sweet, clear song beckoning onward, pulling her. That darkness still dwelled in him, in his wound. They had beaten it so far back, yet it remained. Yesterday, he'd told her things that broke her heart, but not the entire story. But if the key to defeating that shred of vogue blackness did not lie in facing the memories alone, if blind blasts of her magic did nothing, Irene followed the silver bells ringing to where it halted. An ancient corner of the room, the chains rusted with age, some of the bells green from oxidation. Here, the sound of her bell went silent. No, not silent, but waiting, humming against the corner of stone. There was a small bell hanging just by the end of the chain, so oxidized that the writing was nearly impossible to read. But Irene read the name there. Yaffa Towers. She did not feel the hard bite of stone as she fell to her knees. As she read that name, the date from 200 years ago. A Towers woman. A Towers healer, here, with her. A Towers woman had been singing in this room during the years Irene had dwelled here. Even now, even so far from home, she had never once been alone. Yaffa, Irene mouthed the name, a hand on her heart. Enter where you fear to tread. Irene peered up into the darkness of the womb overhead. Feeding. The Vogue's power had been feeding off him. Yes, the darkness above seemed to say. Not a drip sounded. Not a bell chimed. Irene gazed down at her hands, lying limp at her sides. Summoned forth the faint white glow of her power. Let it fill the room, echo off the rock in silent song. Echo off those bells, the voices of thousands of her sisters, the tower's voice before her. Enter where you fear to tread. Not the void lurking within him, but the void within herself. The one that had started the day those soldiers had gathered around her cottage, had hauled her out by her hair into the bright grasses. Had Yaffa known, here in this chamber so far beneath the earth, what happened that day across the sea? Had she watched the past 2 months and sent up her ancient, rusted song in silent urging?
They weren't bad men, Irene.
No, they were not. The men he'd commanded, trained with, who had worn the same uniform, bowed to the same king as the soldiers who had come that day. They were not bad men. People existed in Otterland worth saving, worth fighting for. They were not her enemy, had never been. Perhaps she'd known that long before he'd revealed it in the oasis yesterday. Perhaps she had not wanted to. But the thing that remained inside him, that shred of the demon who had ordered it all.
I know what you are,
Irene said silently. For it was the same thing that had dwelled inside her these years, taking from her, even as it sustained her. A different creature, but still one and the same. Irene spooled her magic back inside herself, the glow fading. She smiled up at the sweet darkness above.
I understand now.
Another drop of water kissed her brow in answer. Smiling, Irene reached out a hand to her ancestor's bell and rang it. Chapter 54 Kaol awoke the next morning and could barely move. They'd repaired his room, added extra guards, and by the time the royals at last returned from the dunes at sundown, all was in order. He didn't see Irene for the rest of that day, and wondered if she and the healer on high had indeed found something of worth in that scroll. But when dinner came, and she still hadn't appeared, he sent Kaja to ask Shen for a report. Shen himself had returned, blushing a bit, no doubt thanks to the beauty of the servant girl who'd led him here, and revealed that he'd made sure word was received from the Torre that Irene had returned safely and had not left the tower since. Still, Kaol had debated calling for Irene when his back began to ache to the point of being unbearable, even when the cane couldn't help him hobble across the room. But the suite was not safe. And if she began to stay here, and Nezrin returned before he could explain, he couldn't get the thought out of his mind. What he'd done. The trust he'd broken. So he'd managed to take a bath, hoping to ease his sore muscles, and had nearly crawled into bed. Kaol awoke at dawn, tried to reach for his cane beside the bed, and bit down his bark of pain. Panic crashed into him, wild and sharp. He gritted his teeth, trying to fight through it. Toes. He could move his toes, and his ankles, and his knees. His neck arched at the rippling agony as he shifted his knees, his thighs, his hips. Oh, gods. He'd pushed it too far. The door flung open, and there she was, in that purple gown. Irene's eyes widened, then settled, as if she'd been about to tell him something. Instead, that mask of steady calm slid over her face, while she tied her hair back in her usual half-up fashion, and approached on unfaltering feet. Can you move?
Yes, but the pain.
He could barely speak. Dropping her satchel to the carpet, Irene rolled up her sleeves. Can you turn over?
No.
He'd tried, and she didn't wait for his answer. Describe exactly what you did yesterday from the moment I left until now. Kaol did. All of it. Right until the bath. Irene swore viciously. Ice! Ice to help strained muscles, not heat! She blew out a breath. I need you to roll over. It will hurt like hell, but it's best if you do it in one go. He didn't wait. He gritted his teeth and did it. A scream shattered from his throat, but Irene was instantly there, hands on his cheek, his hair, mouth against his temple. Good. She breathed onto his skin. Brave man. He hadn't bothered with more than undershorts while sleeping, so she had little to do to prepare him, as she hovered her hands over his back, tracing the air above his skin. It crept back, she breathed.
I'm not surprised,
he said through his teeth. Not at all. She lowered her hands to her sides. Why? He traced a finger over the embroidered coverlet.
Just do what you have to.
Irene paused at his deflection, then riffled through her bag for something. The bit. She held it in her hands, however, instead of sliding it into his mouth. I'm going in, she said quietly.
All right.
No. I'm going in. And I'm ending this. Today. Right now. It took a moment for the words to sink in. All that it'd entail. He dared ask.
And what if I can't?
Face it. Endure it. There was no fear in Irene's eyes. No hesitation. That's not my question to answer. No. It never had been. Kaol watched the sunlight dance on her locket, over those mountains and seas. What she might now witness within him, how badly he'd failed over and over. But they had walked this far down the road, together. She had not turned away from any of it. And neither would he. His throat thick, Kaol managed to say.
You could hurt yourself
if you stay too long.
Again, no ripple of doubt or terror. I have a theory. I want to test it. Irene slid the bit between his lips, and he clamped down lightly. And you, you're the only person I can try it on.
It occurred to Kaol, right as she laid her hands on his bare spine, why he was the only one she could try it on. But there was nothing he could do, as pain and blackness slammed into him. No way to stop Irene as she plunged into his body, her magic a white swarming light around them, inside them. The Vog. His body had been tainted by their power, and Irene...
Irene did not hesitate. She soared through him, down the ladder of his spine, down the corridors of his bones and blood. She was a spear of light, fired straight into the dark, aiming for that hovering shadow that had stretched out once more, that had tried to reclaim him. Irene slammed into the darkness and screamed. It roared back, and they tangled, grappling. It was foreign and cold and hollow. It was rife with rot and wind and hate. Irene threw herself into it, every last drop. And above, as if the surface of a night-dark sea separated them, Kaol bellowed with agony. Today, it ended today. I know what you are. So Irene fought, and so the darkness raged back.
Chapter 55. The agony tore through him, unending and depthless. He blacked out within a minute, leaving him to freefall into this place, this pit, the bottom of the descent, the hollow hell beneath the roots of a mountain. Here, where all was locked and buried. Here, where all had come to take root. The empty foundation, mined and hacked apart, crumbled away into nothing but this pit. Nothing. 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 Worthless and nothing. He saw his father first, his mother and brother and that cold mountain keep, saw the stairs crusted with the ice and snow, stained with blood, saw the man he'd gladly sold himself out to, thinking it would get Aelin to safety, Selena to safety. He'd sent the woman he loved to the safety of another assassination, had sent her to Wendlin, thinking it better than Otterlin, to kill its royal family. His father emerged from the dark, the mirror of the man he might have become, might one day be. Distaste and disappointment etched his father's features as he beheld him, the son that might have been. His father's asking price? He'd thought it a prison sentence. But perhaps it had been a shot at freedom, at saving his useless, wayward son from the evil he likely suspected was about to be unleashed. He had broken that promise to his father. He hated him. And yet his father, that horrible, miserable bastard, had upheld his end of the bargain. He had not. Oathbreaker. Traitor. Everything he had done, Aelin had come to rip it apart, starting with his honor. She, with her fluidity, that murky area in which she dwelled. He'd broken his vows for her. Broken everything he was for her. He could see her. In the dark. The gold hair. Those turquoise eyes that had been the last clue. The final piece of the puzzle. Liar. Murderer. Thief. She basked in the sun atop a chaise lounge on the balcony of that suite she'd occupied in the palace, a book in her lap. Tilting her head to the side, she looked him over with that lazy half-smile, a cat being stirred from its repose. He hated her. He hated that face, the amusement and sharpness, the temper and viciousness that could reduce someone to shreds without so much as a word, only a look. Only a beat of silence. She enjoyed such things. Savored them. And he had been so bewitched by it,
This woman who had been a living flame, he'd been willing to leave it all behind. The honor. The vows he'd made. For this haughty, swaggering, self-righteous woman, he had shattered parts of himself. And afterward, she had walked away, as if he were a broken toy. Right into the arms of that fey prince who emerged from the dark, who approached that lounge chair on the balcony and sat on its end. Her half-smile turned different. Her eyes sparked. The lethal, predatory interest honed in on the prince. She seemed to glow brighter, become more aware, more centered, more alive. Fire and ice. An end and a beginning. They did not touch each other. They only sat on that chaise, some unspoken conversation passing between them, as if they had finally found some reflection of themselves in the world. He hated them. He hated them for that ease, that intensity, that sense of completion. She had wrecked him, wrecked his life, and had then strolled right to this prince as if she were going from one room to another. And when it had all gone to hell, when he'd turned his back on everything he knew, when he had lied to the one who mattered most to keep her secrets, she had not been there to fight, to help. She had only returned months later and thrown it in his face. His uselessness. His nothingness.
You remind me of how the world ought to be. What the world can be.
Lies. The words of a girl who had been grateful to him for offering her freedom, for pushing and pushing her until she was roaring at the world again. A girl who had stopped existing the night they'd found that body on the bed. When she had ripped his face open. When she had tried to plunge that dagger into his heart. The predator he'd seen in those eyes. It had been unleashed. There were no leashes that could ever keep her restrained, and words like honor and duty and trust, they were gone. She had gutted that courtesan in the tunnels. She'd let the man's body drop, closed her eyes, and had looked precisely as she had during those throes of passion. And when she had opened her eyes again, killer, liar, thief. She was still sitting on the chaise, the Fey Prince beside her, both of them watching that scene in the tunnel as if they were spectators in a sport. Watching Archer Finn slump to the stones, his blood leaking from him, face taut with shock and pain. Watching Kaol stand there, unable to move or speak, as she breathed in the death before her, the vengeance. As Celaena Sardothian ended, shattering completely. He had still tried to protect her, to get her out, to atone. You will always be my enemy. She had roared those words with 10 years' worth of rage. And she had meant it. Meant it as any child who had lost and suffered at Otterland's hand would mean it. As Irene meant it. The garden appeared in another pocket of the darkness. The garden and the cottage and the mother and laughing child. Irene. The thing he had not seen coming. The person he had not expected to find. Here in the darkness. Here she was. And yet he had still failed. Hadn't done right by her or by Nezrin. He should have waited. Should have respected them both enough to end one and begin with another. But he supposed he had failed in that too. Aelin and Rowan remained on that chaise in the sunshine. He saw the Fey Prince gently, reverently, take Aelin's hand, turning it over, exposing her wrist to the sun, exposing the faint marks of shackles. He saw Rowan rub a thumb over those scars, saw the fire in Aelin's eyes bank. Over and over, Rowan brushed those scars with his thumb, and Aelin's mask slid off. There was fire in that face, and rage, and cunning, but also sorrow, fear, despair, guilt, shame, pride and hope and love, the weight of a burden she had run from, but now,
I love you. I'm sorry.
She had tried to explain, had said it as clearly as she could,
had given him the truth so he might piece it together when she had left and understand. She meant those words. I'm sorry. Sorry for the lies, for what she had done to him, his life, for swearing that she would pick him, choose him, no matter what.
Always.
He wanted to hate her for that lie. That false promise, which she had discarded in the misty forests of Wendlin. And yet, there, with that prince, without the mask, that was the bottom of her pit. She had come to Rowan, soul limping. She had come to him as she was, and she had never been with anyone. And she had returned whole. Still, she had waited. Waited to be with him. Kaol had been lusting for Irene, had taken her into his bed without so much as thinking of Nezrin, and yet Aelin. She and Rowan looked to him now. Still as an animal in the woods, both of them. But their eyes full of understanding. Knowing. She had fallen in love with someone else. Had wanted someone else, as badly as he wanted Irene. And yet it was Aelin, godless and irreverent, who had honored him. More than he'd honored Nezrin. Aelin's chin dipped, as if to say yes. And Rowan. The prince had let her return to Otterlin. To make right by her kingdom, but to also decide for herself what she wanted. Who she wanted. And if Aelin had chosen Kaol instead? He knew, deep down. Rowan would have backed off. If it had made Aelin happy, Rowan would have walked away without ever telling her what he felt. Shame pressed on him, sickening and oily. He had called her a monster, for her power, her actions, and yet, he did not blame her. He understood that perhaps she had promised things, but she had changed. The path had changed. He understood. He'd promised Nezrin, or had implied it. And when he had changed, when the path had altered, when Irene appeared down it, he understood. Aelin smiled softly at him as she and Rowan rippled into a sunbeam and vanished, leaving a red marble floor, blood pooling across it, a head bumping vulgarly over smooth tile, a prince screaming in agony, in rage and despair.
I love you. Go!
That. If there had been a cleaving, it was that moment. When he turned and ran, and he left his friend, his brother, in that chamber. When he ran from that fight, that death. Dorian had forgiven him, did not hold it against him. Yet he had still run, still left. Everything he had planned, worked to save, all came crumbling down. Dorian stood before him, hands in his pockets, a faint smile on his face. He did not deserve to serve such a man, such a king. The darkness pushed in further, revealing that bloody council room, revealing the prince and king he'd served, revealing what they had done to his men. In that chamber beneath the castle. How Dorian had smiled. Smiled when Rhes screamed, while Brullo had spat in his face. His fault, all of it. Every moment of pain. Those deaths. It showed him Dorian's hands as they wielded those instruments beneath the castle. As blood spurted and bone sundered. Unfaltering, clean hands. And that smile. He knew. He had known. Had guessed. Nothing would ever make it right. For his men. For Dorian, left to live with it. For Dorian, whom he'd abandoned in that castle. That moment, over and over, the darkness showed him. As Dorian held his ground, as he revealed his magic, as good as a death sentence, and bought him time to run. He had been so afraid. So afraid of magic, of loss, of everything. And that fear. It had driven him to it anyway. It had hurried him down this path. He had clung so hard, had fought against it, and it had cost him everything.
too late. He'd been too late to see clearly. And when the worst had happened, when he saw that collar, when he saw his men swinging from the gates, their broken bodies picked over by crows, it had cracked him through to his foundation, to this hollow pit beneath the mountain he'd been. He had fallen apart, had let himself lose sight of it, and he had found some glimmer of peace in Rifthold, even after the injury. And yet, it was like applying a patch over a knife wound to the gut. He had not healed. Unmoored and raging, he had not wanted to heal. Not really. His body, yes, but even that. Some part of him had whispered it was deserved. And the soul wound. He had been content to let it fester. Failure and liar and oathbreaker. The darkness swarmed, a wind stirring it. He could stay here forever, in the ageless dark. Yes, the darkness whispered. He could remain, and rage and hate and curl into nothing but shadow. But Dorian remained before him, still smiling faintly, waiting, waiting for him. He had made one promise, he had not broken it yet. To save them. His friend, his kingdom. He still had that. Even here at the bottom of this dark hell, he still had that. And the road that he had traveled so far? No. He would not look back.
What if we go on? Only to more pain and despair.
Aelin had smiled at his question. Posed on that rooftop in Rifthold, as if she had understood, long before he did, that he would find this pit, and learn the answer for himself. Then it is not the end. This was not the end. This crack in him, this bottom, was not the end. He had one promise left. To that he would still hold.
It is not the end.
He smiled at Dorian, whose sapphire eyes shone with joy, with love.
I'm coming home,
he whispered to his brother, his king. Dorian only bowed his head and vanished into the darkness, leaving Irene standing behind him. She was glowing with white light, bright as a newborn star. Irene said quietly, The darkness belongs to you. To shape as you will, to give it power, or render it harmless.
Was it ever the Volgs to begin with?
His words echoed into nothing. Yes, but it is yours to keep now. This place, this final kernel of it. It would remain in him, a scar and a reminder.
Will it grow again?
Only if you let it. Only if you do not fill it with better things. Only if you do not forgive. He knew she didn't just mean others. But if you are kind to yourself, if you love yourself. Irene's mouth trembled. If you love yourself as much as I love you. Something began to pound in his chest. A drumbeat that had gone silent down here. Irene held a hand toward him. Her iridescence rippling into the darkness. It is not the end.
Will it hurt?
He asked hoarsely.
The way back. The way out.
The path back to life. To himself. Yes, Irene whispered. But just this one last time. The darkness does not want to lose you.
I'm afraid I can't say the same.
Irene's smile was brighter than the glow rippling off her body. A star. She was a fallen star. She extended her hand again. A silent promise of what waited on the other side of the dark. He still had much to do. Oaths to keep. And looking at her. At that smile. Life. He had life to savor. To fight for. And the breaking that had started and ended here. Yes, it belonged to him. He was allowed to break so that this forging might begin, so that he might begin again. He owed it to his king, his country, and he owed it to himself. Irene nodded as if to say yes. So Kaol stood. He surveyed the darkness, this piece of him. He did not balk at it. And smiling at Irene, he took her hand. Chapter 56. It was agony and despair and fear. It was joy and laughter and rest. It was life, all of it. And as that darkness lunged for Kaol and Irene, he did not fear it. He only looked toward the dark and smiled. Not broken. Made anew. And when the darkness beheld him, Kaol slid a hand against its cheek, kissed its brow. It loosened its grip and tumbled back into that pit, curled up on that rocky floor and quietly, carefully, watched him. He had the sense of rising up, of being sucked through a too thin door. Irene grasped him, hauling him up along with her. She did not let go, did not falter. She speared them upward, a star racing into the night. White light slammed into them. No. Daylight. He squeezed his eyes shut against the brightness. The first thing he felt was nothing. No pain. No numbness. No ache or exhaustion. Gone. His legs were. He moved one. It flowed and shifted without a flicker of pain or tension. Smooth as butter. He looked to the right, to where Irene always sat. She was simply smiling down at him. How? He rasped. Joy lit her stunning eyes. My theory. I'll explain later.
Is the mark?
Her mouth tightened. It is smaller, but still there. She poked a point on his spine. Though I do not feel anything when I touch it. Nothing at all. A reminder, as if some god wanted him to remember this. Remember what had occurred. He sat up, marveling at the ease, the lack of stiffness.
You healed me.
I think we both get considerable credit this time. Her lips were too pale. Skin wan. Kaol brushed her cheek with his knuckles.
Are you feeling well?
I'm tired, but fine. Are you feeling well? He scooped Irene into his lap and buried his head in her neck.
Yes, he breathed. 1,000 times, yes.
His chest. There was a lightness to it, to his shoulders. She batted him away. You still need to be careful. This newly healed, you could still injure yourself. Give your body time to rest, to let the healing set. He lifted a brow.
What exactly does resting entail?
Irene's smile turned wicked. Some things that only special patients get to learn. His skin tightened over his bones, but Irene slid off his lap. You might want to bathe. He blinked, looking at himself, at the bed, and cringed. That was vomit. On the sheets, on his left arm.
When?
I'm not sure. The setting sun was indeed gilding the garden, cramming the room with long shadows. Hours. All day they'd been in here. Kaol moved off the bed, marveling at how he slid through the world like a blade through silk. He felt her watching him as he strode for the bathing room.
Hot water is safe now?
He called over his shoulder, stripping off his undershorts and stepping into the deliciously warm bath. Yes, she called back. You're not full of strained muscles. He dunked under the water, scrubbing himself off. Every movement. Holy gods. When he broke from the surface, wiping the water from his face, she was standing in the arched doorway. He went still at the smokiness in her eyes.
Slowly, Irene undid the laces down the front of that pale purple gown, let it ripple to the floor, along with her undergarments. His mouth turned dry as she kept her eyes upon him, hips swishing with every step she took to the pool, to the stairs. Irene stepped into the water, and his blood roared in his ears. Kaol was upon her before she'd hit the last step. They missed dinner, and dessert, and midnight kaveh. Kaja snuck in during the bath to change the sheets. Irene couldn't bring herself to be mortified at what the servant had likely heard. They certainly hadn't been quiet in the water, and certainly weren't quiet during the hours following. Irene was limp with exhaustion when they peeled apart, sweaty enough that another trip to the bath was imminent. Kaol's chest rose and fell in mighty gulps. In the desert, he'd been unbelievable. But now, healed, beyond the spine, the legs, healed in that dark, rotting place within his soul. He pressed a kiss to her sweat-sticky brow, his lips catching in the stray curls that had appeared thanks to the bath. His other hand drew circles on her lower back.
"You said something, down in that pit," he murmured.
Irene was too tired to form words beyond a low,
"You said that you love me."
Well, that woke her up. Her stomach clenched. "Don't feel obligated to..." Kaol silenced her with that steady, unruffled look.
"Is it true?"
She traced the scar down his cheek. She had not seen much of the beginning, had only broken into his memories in time to see that beautiful, dark-haired man, Dorian, smiling at him. But she had sensed it, known who had given him that recent scar. "Yes."
And though her voice was soft, she meant it with every inch of her soul.
The corners of his mouth tugged upward.
"Then it is a good thing, Irene Towers, that I love you as well."
Her chest tightened. She became too full for her body, for what coursed through her.
"From the moment you walked into the sitting room that first day," Kaol said. "I think I knew, even then."
"I was a stranger."
"You looked at me without an ounce of pity. You saw me, not the chair or the injury. You saw me. It was the first time I'd felt seen, felt awake in a long time."
She kissed his chest, right over his heart. "How could I resist these muscles?" His laugh rumbled into her mouth, her bones.
"The consummate professional."
Irene smiled onto his skin. "The healers will never let me hear the end of this. Hafiza is already beside herself with glee."
But she stiffened, considering the road ahead. The choices.
Kaol said after a moment,
"When Nezrin returns, I plan to make it clear. Though I think she knew before I did."
Irene nodded, trying to fight off the shakiness that crept over her.
"And beyond that, the choice is yours, Irene. When you leave, how you leave, if you truly want to leave at all."
She braced herself.
"But if you'll have me, there will be a place for you on my ship, at my side."
She let out a dainty hum and traced a circle around his nipple. "What sort of place?" Kaol stretched out like a cat, tucking his arms behind his head as he drawled,
"The usual options. Scullery maid, cook, dishwasher."
She poked his ribs, and he laughed. It was a beautiful sound, rich and deep. But his brown eyes softened as he cupped her face.
"What place would you like, Irene?"
Her heart thundered at the question, the timbre of his voice. But she smirked and said, "Whichever one gives me the right to yell at you if you push yourself too hard." She drew her hand along his legs, his back. Careful. He'd have to be so, so careful for a while. A corner of Kaol's mouth kicked up, and he hauled her over him.
I think I know of just the position.
Chapter 15.